I'm Mike TV, the band Gets That Go, and on today's episode, we discuss the internet and how from 1985, when I set up my very first Prodigy account at 12 years old, to 2023, the internet has radically changed the lives, revenue streams, and audience access for artists of all stripe. And it continues to change and evolve almost on a daily basis. But the one art form I can speak on with the most authority, of course, is music, but really only from a very independent DIY perspective. But because I've been on the front lines for 30 years now, I think I can offer you a perspective of significant value, particularly if you are just now starting to explore using the internet for your own business. So let's take the Wayback Machine to 1998, in the very beginning days of the Mr. T's scene, and my roommate and friend Karen Levy and I were discussing MP3s and MP3.com and our little rock and roll community. And we decided it would be awesome to have our own MP3 distribution site, just for our bands. Unfortunately, my sister was a coder that had graduated from Stanford, and so the three of us figured we could create a website that distributed the music of all of Mr. T's bands via MP3s. Teresa was going to handle the heavy lifting on the HTML and website design. Karen, who was super tech savvy, was going to focus on the encoding of our cassette tapes to MP3s, and I was going to be the fellow that gathered all the music and wrote a lot of the site text, and also coordinated and got permission from all the bands to use their music. And the website was called Y Records. The letter Y, not the word Y. Now, unfortunately, we launched this site at a point in time where most people still had dial-up modems, which meant it would take 20 minutes for the average internet user to download a single 3 megabyte MP3. So alas, we were a little bit ahead of our time because who wants to wait 20 minutes for a 3.5 minute song? But it was huge for galvanizing the bands into something that felt like family. We were bonded by Y Records as our de facto record label, and then having a physical space where we could meet regularly at Mr. T's, these two connections created a stronger bond than would have existed with only one in play. And this led to more hanging out, and eventually we were holding backyard shows and a festival at Griffith Park and barbecues, and we went to movies and rock shows together. So this was a pretty unique moment in time where a website that didn't get an enormous amount of traffic had a huge impact on a bunch of local artists. Artists who felt continually more tribal as we kept adding new bands to the Y Records lineup. Oh, and as a side note, Y Records was often our friends and our audience's first introduction to MP3s. And it was also often many of the band's first presence on the internet. So Y Records became our online calling card. You know, people wanted to know about us online and we would point them to Y Records. And the site was very easy to explore. Each band had a cool little bio and a bunch of songs on their personal page. Very much a predecessor to MySpace, except we were all connected. So just going through the site for a newcomer, reading and listening, it really felt like these bands knew each other and liked each other. You know, a nascent scene, which is exactly what it was. So let's jump ahead in time a little bit, because I've talked about Mr. T's and the scene and the impact it had on early Get Set Go, but I don't think I've really gotten in depth into the role that MySpace played for Get Set Go during the height of what I would call the second era of the Mr. T's scene. You see, I was a pretty early adopter of MySpace. I joined January 1st, 2005, and one of the amazing things about the site, just like Y Records, is that they let us feature our music on our page. So someone stumbling upon Get Set Go's music page could listen to our music right there. On the page. No downloading, just give it a spin. And this was huge. So somewhere between the peak of the Mr. T scene and MySpace, Y Records eventually became an epitaph site where it just stood testament to the early days of the scene. And you can actually still find it on the Internet Archive, and it's a pretty fascinating little snapshot of the early days of our community. But with MySpace, there were two strategies that I employed that allowed us to grow pretty quickly on the site. The first was, every day, I would find 400 people, all friends of bands that I knew or liked, and I'd send them a personalized message. I'd look at that person's page, see a band that they liked, often the band that led me to them, and I'd reach out and say something to the effect of like, hey, I'm Mike TV, I saw that you love band X, and I love them too. One of my favorite songs of theirs is Song Y, and they're a big influence on my band, and so I figured I would say hello and invite you to check us out. I'm always on MySpace, so feel free to message me if you want to chat. And every day, I'd send out 400 of these personalized messages, which was MySpace limit, and then when I got responses, I would respond to every single message. And there were a lot of them. And this was an hours and hours long process every single day. And then the number two strategy I used to grow Get Set Go's group of MySpace friends was that I would post a daily blog just to keep the conversation going and to give a little silly fun for my daily readers. And I always signed off with a closing statement like, with sparkling underpants of love, Mike TV, or with furious hedgehogs of delight, Mike TV. But it was something silly and lyrical comical and a bit bizarre. And just those closing lines became pretty popular. I would receive messages where people would close their comments to me using the same sort of silly closing statement I did. So it was a ton of work, but it was awesome. And we grew and continued to grow from 2005 to 2007. So when somewhere during this period, everyone started jumping ship to Facebook, I was like, fuck, like I have to do all this work again? Really? And Facebook was back then and still remains to this day absolutely terrible for bands. So I was just broken.
Oh, my heart is full of sand, and my intellect's a man, and my joy has been remanded without bond. My fire does not burn, oh, my yearnings do not yearn, and I want for want, it's all I want. There is nothing I can do, I've been bled dry, it's true.
And just like that, years and years of work was just up in smoke.
Oh, my dreams have all been dreamt, and my hope is all but spent, and I plan on making plans some other day. So let me disconnect, let me suffer from neglect, let me disaffect everything. There is nothing I can do, I've been bled dry, it's true.
And that's a problem, right? When things go up in smoke, how do you start over?
I don't know what to do.
The heartbreaking thing for me is that when I get this despondent, sometimes I don't see the forest for the trees.
My star has lost its shine, oh, the darkness I've made mine, and my way is lost and I don't mind at all. My voice is barely heard and I cannot find the words as I sit alone in my bedroom. There is nothing I can do, I've been bled dry, it's true.
So I just spent a couple years licking my wounds.
I don't know what to do.
Now, if I had been smarter, I would have, as people were leaving to join Facebook, I should have said, hey, MySpace folk, we're all reconvening on the hot new social media site. Come on, let's go. But I didn't. I did not. God damn it. I just walked away from the tens of thousands of hard-fought connections I had made. Was I an idiot? Am I an idiot?
There is nothing I can do. I've been bled dry. It's true.
Hindsight, right?
Oh, my dreams have all been dreamt, and my hope is all but spent, and I plan on making plans some other day. So let me disconnect, let me suffer from neglect, let me disaffect everything.
Hey, I'm Mike TV, and this is episode 4 of season 2 of Hesitation Cuts, the show where we jump feet first into the wild and wicked raging torrent that is independent music, dashing ourselves against the rocks in the hopes that perhaps someday we will become unbashable. Today's episode is about the internet and how it has changed the face of music forever. For better, for worse, only you can decide. So MySpace was a complete bust, and Facebook was and still is just a total shit show as far as bands are concerned, for myriad reasons, but I'm just gonna focus on one. So Facebook has billions of monthly users, right? And every user has many things that they're fond of. And because so much is on Facebook, there's a huge probability that the things you like can be found and followed. And when you follow someone that you like, it feels like you're opting in to hear everything they have to say, right? It's social media, it's about being connected. But liking something, following something on Facebook isn't going to get you all of their posts, perspectives, and the thoughts from the people that you follow. If they have a public-facing account, say your favorite band or writer or celebrity, then in order for you to hear from them, unless of course you're always checking in on their feed, keeping your activity with your said favorite whatever super engaged, then they, a person that you follow, in order to reach you, they have to pay for their message to be placed in your feed. So basically, except for your most absolutely engaged fans, and even that is still a crapshoot, because I have some hardcore fans that say sometimes that they didn't receive a recent post. But basically, Facebook is a for-pay audience farm. It's not a place to stay connected. It's not a place to form strong relationships with fans or just shoot the breeze and be friendly with them because they're your people, because they're folks with whom your art connects. If you want to approximate that as an artist, you have to pay. And that, for my money, is heartbreaking. Because Facebook, from the friend side, is where you can stay connected with people that maybe you don't hang out with anymore, or maybe you went to school with 10, 20, 30 years ago. And it allows you to stay connected. Not very well, sadly, but it does allow you to keep up. But Facebook on the business side, on the public-facing side, is a very, very different beast. And it's crazy because I did, for a while, I did actually have a Get Set Go personal Facebook page. It was created in 2006 and it just survived for years. I don't know how. Facebook just overlooked it. So I had a Get Set Go page and a Me, My TV Facebook page. And the personal Get Set Go page, not a business page, but a personal friend page, was where all my music friends lived. The bands, the promoters, the bookers, the owners of venues, they all lived on my Get Set Go personal Facebook page. I certainly had a lot of crossover, lots of friends on both pages, but the conversations were very different. The Get Set Go page was for discussions regarding music, and the Mike TV page was for my family and friends, and it was great! Until Facebook decided that they wanted me to use their service the way they wanted, and I was opted out against my will. Which I get. I don't own Facebook. I didn't pay for my profile. I would think that the money that they get from data mining what I'm into, what I click on, and the ads they put on my page would be enough of a trade-off, but that's the thing about business, right? It's never enough. It's gotta grow and keep growing, or people get fired. Which again, I think is heartbreaking. But the crazy thing is, during this period where my MySpace footprint was eroding to the point that it had effectively been erased, and I hadn't truly set up a Facebook presence, Get Set Go was still going strong. Unfortunately, in a pretty terrible way. I mean, there was still a lot of activity because there were a lot of services that were giving our music away for free. They started off as peer-to-peer sites back in 2003 when our album first hit stores, and then eventually evolved into torrent sites. But it was crazy, man. I would hop into places like LimeWire and Pirate Bay just out of curiosity about the sort of traffic Get Set Go was getting. And on some sites, there were tens of thousands of downloads. And my record label knew we were being stolen from, but they didn't understand the internet and didn't have a plan for how to combat the stealing, which of course no one really did at the time. But what kills me is that TSR Records, my record label, didn't fully metabolize the idea that thousands and thousands of people were stealing Get Set Go records. Thousands and thousands. That maybe putting a little more love, a little more attention into the band, and maybe finding a way to make it easy for people to actually buy our record, maybe that was the best way forward. But instead, they just saw underwhelming performance and just kept hitting the brakes. So again, hindsight being 2020, if everyone had played their cards differently, Get Set Go could have been way, way more financially successful. But they didn't. And we weren't. So I went from poor to even poorer, watching people steal my music in real time. And the sad thing is, through my record deal, I made $1 per album sold. So every album download I saw on a torrent site, that was $1 stolen straight out of my pocket, which made how much money I was losing, how much I wasn't getting paid, very, very easy to understand. 11,000 downloads, $11,000, I'll never be paid. So all of my work, all of my effort, just wasted time.
Everybody knows that cheating's not the answer, but sometimes cheating is a whole lot faster. I get by wasting time. And everybody knows that it pays to be a winner, but winning ain't easy when you're born to be a sinner. And I get by wasting time. La 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 la.
Yeah, right? Like, aren't we all on the same team? I'm writing the music. I'm doing everything I can to promote. I'm working myself like a pack mule every day. So what? No support? Or the bare minimum?
I don't know where I went wrong, but if I hadn't, there wouldn't be the song. And I get by wasting time. La 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 la. La 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 la.
Now, I'm not laying my career woes at the feet of TSR Records or Facebook or MySpace or even the sites that made stealing my music so easy. I mean, yes, each of them did ultimately make my struggle more difficult, but they weren't thinking about me. They were thinking about what was best for them and their business. And this is one of the pitfalls of growing up in what is tantamount to the Wild West. The internet is the new great frontier, and the rules are always changing.
Sweetheart, are we broken? We have let remain unspoken. Sadly, sweetheart, are we broken? We have let remain unspoken. All that wants a little love from you. All that wants a little love from you. All that wants a little love from you.
So being stolen from, being underpaid, knowing that people are profiting from your efforts without you participating financially at all, like that had become so baked into what I do that I don't even sweat it anymore. I mean, it's fine, right? So long as I can pay my bills and keep working the way I want to work, it can just be considered a cost of doing business. And that was fine for a long, long time. But now I've got a family. And my partner is from another country. So while we are sorting out her immigration stuff, I am the sole breadwinner. Which finally, after 20 plus years of me doing this professionally, forced me to sit down and really pay attention to how my revenue worked. Now, I've been live streaming since 2010. I started live streaming on Ustream. And I don't recall actually integrating tipping into the Ustream performances, and if I did, it was never really a big thing. But I got other amazing benefits from live streaming in the early days. I started doing song commissions for a few $100 a pop, and I would use the live streams to vet new material so that the band could figure out what songs to prioritize for albums. You know, so much of my music career, literally from the outset, has been informed by audience reaction, and I didn't want to let that go. I mean, Get Set Go was still playing out in Los Angeles quite a bit, and I was doing the Thirsty Crow and other residencies, but I also just had so much music to put in front of audiences, I just needed more stage time. But when I moved to Austin, I realized that I was leaving my home base. I'd have a much smaller physical fan base. And so the idea of playing live, playing in live venues, seemed like it would involve starting over. More networking, more evenings out in nightclubs as I'm familiarizing myself with the Austin scene. And that was just way more work than I was willing to put in because I was in the process of writing 100 new songs that would eventually become Here Be Dragons, Furthermore, The Pleasure of Being Sad, and so much more. So I decided to instead focus on recording and putting out records. But it wasn't long before I realized I still need a live audience. That's how my music develops. So in October of 2015, I started live streaming on Twitch. This time with an emphasis on this being my predominant way of performing. Live shows were going to take a backseat. And as it turns out, I was able to develop a really wonderful group of regulars that felt and still feel, to this day, very much like family. And on top of that, I was making pretty decent money from tips. And eventually Twitch introduced subscriptions and bits, and suddenly Twitch revenue came to be one of my three most significant monthly revenue streams, which was great. Until, of course, the pandemic hit. At which point you would think people being locked in their homes for months on end would be amazing for an internet streamer, right? More people at home surfing the internet to combat the long hours of pandemic isolation. What's not great about that? And certainly there was a huge influx of people, but there was also a significant influx of live music streamers. And because I only play originals, and because Twitch never at any point came up with a way to distinguish between artists playing original songs and musicians playing covers, suddenly Twitch was inundated with the best songs by the best artists in history, right? Because when you're competing with people playing covers, you're you're not up against the person actually playing the song. You've literally thrown your hat into the ring with the Beatles and Nirvana and Oasis and Janis Joplin and Taylor Swift and John Denver and every other artist that has songs that have been played billions of times over the past decade. Because most people would rather hear a terrible cover of a song they know than listen to a compelling, even mind-blowing song that they don't. It's just the way most music listeners are built. And I've personally experienced this thousands of times. Now, I have manifold issues regarding Twitch, how their affiliate and partner programs work, issues with TwitchCon, about their artist outreach, etc. And many, many other things that I just won't get into unless I hear from you, my audience, saying you really want to hear about it. But the most frustrating issue is simply the fact that Twitch took half my subscription money every month. If I made $400 in subscriptions 1 month, so did Twitch. And at first, I really didn't even think about it, right? I was busy working on albums and touring the planet and putting together this podcast. But then, come 2022, I've now been on Twitch for 7 years, and I'm thinking about the family, and I'm trying to understand where the money is going and what I'm doing for my partners, in quotes. And man, doing the math, the money all these third-party sites were taking, Twitch, Streamlabs, Ursa Live, etc., it really added up, like a brand new car's worth of money. And I'm figuring you might already know this, but as a working-class musician, I have never had enough money or revenue stable enough to even consider buying a brand new car. Ever. And when you work this hard for as many decades as I have and make other people lots and lots of money while I make nothing, while people steal and underpay, or such as this podcast, just enjoy for free because that's the business model of today, you get a bit tetchy.
I feel mean today, and I wanna see what I can get away with. Feeling obscene today, and I wanna kick and punch and scratch the day away. Wouldn't you like to go unseen? Wouldn't you like to go away with me? Wouldn't you like to go unseen? Wouldn't you like to go away? I'm getting screwed today, but I don't mind because I was gonna lose anyway.
Like, have I been this beaten down? Am I this whipped of a dog that I feel like losing is my birthright? That I will be taken advantage of and that's just the way of the world? Like, really?
And I'm getting used today, but I'm getting used to being used, so it's okay. Wouldn't you like to go unseen? Wouldn't you like to go away with me? Wouldn't you like to go unseen? Wouldn't you like to go away with me? I feel mean. I feel mean, I feel mean. You gotta go, 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 go. You gotta fight, 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 fight. You gotta go, 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 go until you die, 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 die. So I feel mean, 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 I feel mean.
So Twitch, I think, takes way more than they should for the services they provide. I mean, I'm doing all the work. They've just built a site and provided some internet gewgaws that effectively swiped a large fraction of my revenue in exchange for some emotes. pretty fucking shabby. And I think that them getting this oversized portion of revenue without any significant pushback from their performers, 99% of which are amateurs, has made them hungry for even more, and we're seeing this play out in the Twitchosphere right now. And boy, if this episode wasn't running so long, I could really drill into this much deeper. But at least Twitch saw that what I did had some value. But Spotify, man, let's unpack the fury-provoking chaos that is Spotify. Now, first, there is a lot of controversy over their business practices. Practically since the beginning, they've been accused of underpaying musicians, which is 100% true. In fact, they don't pay musicians. They pay rights holders. They pay record labels. They pay publishers. And they pay the underlying copyright holders, such as the songwriter. Now, I don't know about you, but if you give a record label a big lump sum of unassigned money each month for access to their catalog, I just don't imagine them racing to divide that money with their artists. Oh, and also, not everyone is paid equally. They're paid on a deal-by-deal basis, which is predicated on the market share that each artist holds of the total number of songs listened to in a given month. However, Spotify controls the market share that each artist holds by controlling the editorial and algorithmic playlists. They've already gotten into hot water by allowing record labels to buy placement on these playlists that guarantees listeners for their new releases. And they do not disclose these payments, which is tantamount to payola, which is currently illegal for radio stations broadcasting on the public airwaves, but not the internet. And this is something that significantly, unfairly unbalances the playing field. It's not based on the merits of the songs or the songwriting, or even how carefully marketed something is. It's based on relationships and how much money is spent. So if you're a poor indie rock band from Des Moines, you're fighting an uphill battle no matter how amazing your songs are. Also, they've been accused of creating fake bands or AI-propelled bands that offer, in quotes, quality control for their playlists. Now, Spotify denies this unequivocally, but Music Business Worldwide, a leading information service for the global music industry, listed 50 such bands that had no internet presence, no affiliated record label, no social media presence, no footprint anywhere else but on Spotify that had millions and millions of plays. So explain that. And the list goes on and on. And Spotify is another company that I'd like to dive into at greater length if I hear from my listeners that they want me to. Because there's so much that they do that is awful, including shadow banning me for months and months because I had music with lyrics their algorithm thought was pro-violence and pro-extreme sexual perversion because it could not determine that it was instead comedy. Damn it. And it cost me 22,000 monthly listeners. Now, there are some things that Spotify does exceptionally well, like music discovery, but there's a reason why they're good at this, in my estimation, and it's not as benign as you might think. Let's talk numbers for a moment. So the average Spotify listener right now listens to the service for about 25 hours a month. So if you assume a song is on average around 3.5 minutes, then that's about 450 songs a month. So trying to understand your $10 Spotify subscription and what percentage of that gets paid out to the artists is a big point of contention amongst a lot of musicians. But I think that the math is incorrect, and I also don't think it's just underpaying the artists that is the true damage that Spotify is doing to the world of music. Now, everyone has heard that Spotify pays an average of about 0.004 cents per stream, which is less than half a penny. Now, Spotify is actually pretty opaque about how this works because according to their website, they say, in quotes, "Contrary to what you might have heard, Spotify does not pay artist royalties according to a per play or per stream rate. The royalty payments that artists receive might vary according to the differences in how their music is streamed or the agreements they have with labels or distributors," unquote. Which again is horseshit because Spotify certainly isn't saying, oh, hey, look at these poor independent bands, let's kick them down a little better royalty to help even the playing field. Fuck no. But back to the halfpenny. Everyone else on the planet seems to agree that they pay around 0.004 cents per stream. So let's assume that that's close to true on average. So according to the math that everyone seems to agree, for your $10 subscription to Spotify, your 450 songs only equals $1.70 going to paying the artists. But Spotify says they pay 70% of their revenue to the artists and labels. They say they pay $7 of your $10 subscription to the rights holders. So where's the disconnect? And the more I thought about it, I suddenly came to the realization, oh, wait, we're thinking about this all wrong because Spotify really isn't in the business of people listening to an entire song. Weird, right? They're a music streaming service, but they pay out for 30 seconds of listening. 30 seconds of play equals one listen on most, if not all, streaming services, which of course is absurd. If you're a musician, should we all be writing 30-second songs? That's much easier. But if you think about it, it works to Spotify's benefit because they want to keep you scrolling and actively engaging with their app. They'd prefer if you were to listen to, say, 30 seconds of 20 songs before finally sticking with one over listening to one song all the way through right out the gate. And why would that be? And the answer is for the metrics. I don't think they give a fuck about people falling in love with bands. I mean, I certainly don't think that the Spotify employees think of themselves as draconian music subverting attention killers. I just think that they like the metrics. I mean, who doesn't like metrics? It's how companies raise money, increase their shareholder value, and convince people they're growing. Metrics. And if listening to an intro and verse counts as a full listen, then they're able to count way, way more engagement. Everybody's numbers go up. People aren't actually listening to the songs, which is terrible, ultimately, for the musicians, but everyone's numbers go up. Pretty awesome, considering metrics are king right now. And this would make perfect sense as to why they shadow ban me. Because they want your music browsing experience to be consistent. Consistency is king, which is why they created those AI bans for, in quotes, quality control. So if, for instance, you're listening to a song that has a similar sounding vibe to my song, Paleophile, and then Paleophile comes on with its hilarious but certainly arresting lyrics, it's going to conflict with the consistency thing. Because I literally write songs that force people to pay attention, that pull them out of whatever they're doing, like a record scratch, and go, wait, what did he just say? And that impulse of mine is going to likely change people's engagement behavior. And that, I believe, is the thing that Spotify does not want. They want people listening and scrolling and pushing buttons. It's not about the music, it's not about the songs, it's not about the artists, it's about engagement with the app. So that's my theory. So bring it back to the math and the metrics by which everyone qualifies success, you know, songs played, hours listened, it makes sense that Spotify would be gaming the numbers. Certainly they're taking advantage of the AM radio impulse, as I call it. I don't know if many of you remember having a radio that only captured AM bandwidth, but if you were a music listener back in the day and you only had an AM radio, you just kept spinning the dial until you found something you liked.
Everybody's gonna holler, everybody's gonna scream, and that's just the way it is. And everything that you think should belong to you, somebody's gonna say it's his. And everybody's gonna get paid before all you sorry motherfuckers do. So you better learn to like eating your crow just like the dirty hobos do. And it's a long way up to the top, and you damn well better not ever stop, or you will fall to the death of us all. You gotta keep on writing, keep on working, slaving every day on the false premise that someday you will get paid. Or can't you see that you gotta bleed for your money?
So let me tell you this. I just released my newest album, Juggernaut, and made it available exclusively through Bandcamp, where after a limited number of listens, they encourage you to buy the album for $7. And I made about $2,000 in sales in the first 6 weeks or so. In contrast, I make about $1,200 each year for all of my streaming revenue. Just look up Gets That Go's numbers on Spotify and tell me that something's not broken.
Everybody's gonna lie and everybody's gonna cheat. You know you're already screwed. The only way to keep yourself from getting too hurt is for you to provide the lube. And if God willing, you should climb your way up to the top of the heap. You gotta know that there's not much of anything that you will be allowed to keep. And it's a long way up to the top, and you damn well better not ever stop, or you will fall to the death of a soul. You gotta keep on working, keep on jerking, keep on keeping on. And maybe someday when you're dead, someone will steal your song. Oh, can't you see that you gotta bleed for your money?
So Spotify doesn't seem to be built around listening to an entire song from beginning to end. So no wonder they're not going to pay a fair wage for a song. They don't care about the song. Otherwise, they'd pay more and ask people to listen longer. Instead, they're leaning into the AM radio impulse that keeps people searching. And in that environment, it's the bigger bands with the bigger budgets that are more familiar and ubiquitous that are going to dominate. So fair market? Hell no.
Why does anyone do what we do when we're sure that we're screwed? Oh, I know it's true. Are we dumb? It sure seems to look that way. We starve and we slave and we spend all our days writing tunes that we know will be stolen away. Are we dumb, dumb, dumb? Are we dumb, dumb, dumb? I'm so dumb. La 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 la.
la 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 la. I'm so dumb, dumb, dumb. La 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 la. La, 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 la.
And in this, as in every time I use the word dumb in my songs, I mean speechless. My voice is not heard. There's so much white noise, so much distraction, I might as well just shut up, lay down, and take my lumps. And that is something I refuse to do. So I keep writing, recording, taking my beautiful, handcrafted musical children, and throwing them into the abyss, hoping that something's gonna change. So what's the definition of insanity again?
I'm so dumb.
So here I am, 50 years old. I hold the IP for hundreds and hundreds, more than likely 1,000 to 2,000 songs. I'm 14 episodes and 70 brand new song recordings into my very first podcast. I have 23 albums in stores, number 24 is in the can. I've licensed 20 plus songs to film and TV, and I keep finding myself running out of money. I've borrowed from friends, from family, I've maxed out my credit cards, and I'm fucking sick and tired of it, man. So I've decided to double down. I left Twitch. And I'm only using music streaming services as a way to promote one single from each record. That's it. I'm desperately trying to walk away from all third-party participation in my financial livelihood so I live or die off of my own efforts. And also, I don't have to discover that I've been getting robbed for years, even if I signed up for being robbed a la Twitch, which of course is silly, but hey, it's a silly world. So the thing is, I'm going it alone. Well, at least from the work perspective. And as such, I am increasing my workload, my already absurdly intense workload. But I think that the only things we truly value in life are things that we have to work hard for. You know, it's the effort we put in that creates the value. It's the doing and the struggle and the obstacles we overcome that create the sense of intense satisfaction when you finally arrive at your destination. It's why people climb Mount Everest and why we went to the moon. So for me, when I'm finally able to put my financial burden down, doing it my way, on my terms, by the sweat of my brow and the fire in my belly and the fury in my heart, well, that's going to be a good day. If it ever comes. You know, and I have to reconcile myself to the fact that the very way people digest and think about music has been eroding since MP3s first became readily available with MP3.com back in 1997. You know, I climbed onto a sinking ship, and I don't know if I can save it, but I'm damn well gonna try because music is my everything. Well, music, my family, and my dogs. But you know, music is life. It is my life. And if that doesn't have value in this world, in this place, at this time, then fuck it. I'm just suiting up and going to war.
If every time you try, oh, they say that you fail, or when you get some speed, or you get derailed, and if you stand up, they knock you down, and if you had the fire, but the flames burn out, well, sugar, don't you know that we will never give up? The things that don't kill us only toughen us up. So you go, 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 and gird your loins, ready the attack, push them back, destroy. And when they come to defy us, and when they think they can try us, we'll shoot them down, those bastards they'll see. We'll light them up like a Christmas tree. Oh, let's get ready for war. Let's go over the top. Let's get ready for war. And we're never ever gonna stop. Let's get ready for war. Let's go over the top. Let's get ready for war. And we're never ever gonna stop.
So this is the fire I feel in my belly every fucking day. And I share this with other people that struggle against a world that is more about profits and metrics and success than genuine human connection, friendship, and kindness.
If everything's a struggle, if everything's a pain, if you're always almost losing so much more than you gain, then just stop looking for an out, and get yourself hooked up, get ready for a bouncy. Brother, we're not going down without a fight, even if we have to set the world on fire. Up, up, hoist your batons, let's get ready to sound the charge. And when they come to defy us, and when they think they can try us, we'll shoot them down, those bastards they'll see. We'll light them up like a Christmas tree. Oh, let's get ready for war. Let's go over the top. Let's get ready for war. And we're never ever gonna stop. Let's get ready for war. Let's go over the top. Let's get ready for war.
I've been asking people for a long time to pay attention. Hell, I've been trying to yank my musician friends into doing this differently so we can all of us focus on music and performing together and taking our shared love of one of the only perfect things I've ever known and making it happen, you know? But a person can only ask for so long before they just say, fuck it, I'm out. Now, I still have got gas in the tank, man. But boy, people getting fired up about what I do, sharing it, supporting it, giving back a tiny fraction of what I've given, that would fucking save my life, man.
And when they come to defy us, and when they think they can try us, we'll shoot them down, those bastards they'll see. We'll light them up like a Christmas tree, oh. Let's get ready for war. Let's go over the top. Let's get ready for war. And we're never ever gonna stop. Let's get ready for war. Let's go over the top. Let's get ready for war. And we're never ever gonna stop. Let's get ready for war. Let's go over the top. Let's get ready for war. And we're never ever gonna stop. Let's get ready for war. Let's go over the top. Let's get ready for war. And we're never ever gonna stop.
So that's the episode. I'm not certain if you caught the lyric, up, up, hoist your petard in that last song. It's great because A, it's a reference to the Underachievers March and Fight song by one of my favorite bands in the world. Definitely look it up. And B, getting hoist on your own petard means that you are hurt by your own plans and strategies. But that's what's gotta happen if you're out in the weeds trying to carve a life for yourself that follows no roadmap. Sometimes you make bad choices. Sometimes you choose bad partners. And when you do, you course correct and head in a different direction, a little wiser and always stronger for the experience. So I really want to say something about Patreon and about my new streaming service Launchpad and about how you can support me. But I think I'd be doing you and me a disservice if I did. You like what I do? Come find me and support me the best way you can. That's all I can ask. Think about it. You can be a barnacle on the ship, or you can be the wind in its sails. Your choice. Be well, eat your veggies, live forever.